Welcome, everyone. This is Health or Consequences, the monthly health policy podcast for Commonwealth Beacon, looking at issues and controversies in Massachusetts healthcare and health policy and public health. I'm John McDonough. I'm from the Harvard Chan School of Public Health in Boston, and I'm joined by my esteemed colleague, Paul Hattis, from the Lown Institute. Everybody who pays attention to this podcast knows that there's been a lot of controversy over the last months and years in terms of Steward healthcare in particular, but also larger issues with the healthcare system, emergency department overcrowding, inability to transfer patients out of hospitals, lots of problems that lead to the question, is anybody planning this system anymore? What should be done? And so in furthering that conversation and process today, Paul and I are welcoming Charlie Donahue, who was in the 1980s, between 1981 and 1988, the executive director of an organization in metropolitan Boston called the Health Planning Council of Greater Boston. It was an important organization. Charlie was a courageous and gutsy and provocative leader of that organization. And we thought it would be interesting and useful to get into the Wayback Machine and go back in time and consider that period and whether or not it has any relevance for today. So welcome, Charlie. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much. Enjoy being with you.
Thanks, Charlie. So I'll start out. So you were executive director of the Health Planning Council for Greater Boston throughout most of the 1980s. The council started before you back in the late 60s. What was that organization's purpose? Why did it exist? And what was the context around it?
Well, the organization originally was set up with support from the federal government, with an interest in getting consumers and local people involved in looking at health, the health system, and health planning, and giving guidance to hospitals and institutions, but also to respond to hospital and other groups wanting to do things. And the concern was, have a consumer majority on a board of directors. That was the first challenge. Where do the consumers come from, and what value can they be in making these decisions? So the Health Planning Council of Greater Boston got started in the late 60s. I spent a year with them right out of graduate school, working with the Boston neighborhood. So I was out with all of the neighborhoods, five committees, and they all offered their opinions on things that were happening. One of the more interesting things was that the Peter Bent Brigham Hospital and the Boston Hospital for Women were going to merge into a new hospital called the Affiliated Hospital Center. And that later became Brigham and Women's. So our little committee was asked to comment on it. And we knew there was nothing we were going to be able to do. But what we did say was the board of directors of this new hospital should have on it a representative from the Health Planning Council of Greater Boston, from the Mass League of Community Health Centers, from the City of Boston, and from the state of Massachusetts. That went through with the certificate of need for this new hospital. It created a lot of controversy internally to have representatives that weren't under the control of the hospital. And that's the most crucial thing. When you think about Steward, you think about all these other hospitals, they appoint a board of directors that are very supportive of the management, no matter how incompetent it is. So anyway, that was my first opportunity to work in health planning. And I worked at the various health planning programs. I won't get into the details until I became executive director. And what we tried to do then was, how do we get a new board of directors, consumer majority, and what are the issues we can take on that will make a difference between responding to the certificates of need, which were big in those days. Boston, with all the major teaching centers, is always innovative, trying to come up with new technology, new things. How could we work with the major employers and major unions with their health insurance costs? And then finally, how could we begin to do studies of our own with data to convince people where are the areas of cutting costs and dealing with lack of access where people aren't getting care they should get? Those became issues for us.
Charlie, I want to jump in first and welcome you. This is Paul Hattis, and then place what you were doing when you took over in the context nationally, because as we all know, in the early or mid-1970s, federal government passed a law to support health planning agencies to exist around the country. And you know, and the federal government's motivation at that time already was cost control, since Medicare and Medicaid had passed already, the amount of healthcare spending on GDP fueled by that and private had already doubled over, you know, from the mid-60s to the early 70s. But place what you were doing in the context of what some of the pressures were nationally.
The debate about planning began in the 30s. Then it became to consumer involvement of planning, not just experts in heart disease, cancer, and stroke, but that maybe what can consumers do? What questions should they be asking? So that's when the 1970, mid-70 health planning came in to get consumer involvement, consumer majorities on the board of directors, 205 health systems agencies, small geographic areas. Massachusetts had 5. Now, part of that was the hospital strategies, because they knew if these were small areas doing planning, they could control them. They're very powerful with the hospital boards of directors. They could get in, influence them, and it's easier to deal with these local groups than a state government. So part of the reason health planning failed, but how it was set up in the first place, were the hospitals. And they wanted these HSAs, these small areas, Massachusetts 5. Greater Boston, the one that I ran, had all these teaching hospitals, some of the best in the world, very powerful, coming up with new technologies no one ever even heard of before, asking us as a consumer group, what do we think? So it was very challenging in Boston, and that's when we began to get innovative with a lot of smart people on our board of directors, a lot of smart friends, a lot of supportive groups like the neighborhood health centers, et cetera.
So Charlie, I think we were a little bit unique. About that era, though, since did we not have control of commercial prices by state laws, and or is that true? And was cost control a real issue at that time period or not in our state?
Well, the highest priority in the Mass Business Roundtable, the Associated Industries of Mass, was their health insurance costs. It caused them when Mitt Romney came to Massachusetts to say to him, you know, you got to do something about this, Mitt. It was also a major concern of the unions, the building trade unions particularly. You know, they sit down and they negotiate the union with the management, and the health cost was eating up a big part of the money available in a paycheck and a. So those were two groups very concerned in the 80s with the health insurance costs in Massachusetts and wanted to do something about what they were paying without cutting benefits, which was the traditional way you cut benefits. So we get involved with both the unions and the businesses, and we get them working together with us helping them with the educational programs that we ran for them and the work that we did. So one of our three major things at the Health Planning Council was to help them reduce their health insurance costs, mostly for self-insured employers and unions.
So, Charlie, you're 8 years running the Health Planning Council of Greater Boston. During that period of time in the 80s, a very controversial period. Every period is controversial in its own way, but that one in particular. What were the major successes of the Health Planning Council? Were you able to have some important wins? Did you have some big fights that were unsuccessful? What did the Health Planning Council, what was it able to accomplish?
One of the interesting things were certificates of need. We were asked to look at them.
For our listeners, what's a certificate of need? Can you explain that?
There was a program every state had, and this is one of the big selling points of health planning in the 70s. They're going to do something about health costs, and capital construction costs generate probably, if you're spending $300 million in hospital costs, that's generating, you know, probably 10% of that is new cost to the health system. So employers and everybody became interested in hospital construction, new beds, new technology. So we were asked together to advise the Public Health Council, the state-appointed body. We were just advisory. We had no power. But my secretary told me that last night, Charlie, we're on the McNeil Lear Report, very well-educated secretary. It was a PBS show, 15 minutes per issue. And she said, last night, Margaret Heckler, the former Wellesley Congress lady, now secretary of HEW, was on there last night and announced a new technology that the FDA has approved that day. And then she said, according to studies by the Health Planning Council for Greater Boston, anyway, the FDA used our work, the studies we did, to approve a lithotripter. How many do we need? Where do we need them? How many hospitals need them? The next day, we had 1,000 telephone calls because we were considered the experts in the world on lithotripters just because of the work that my staff did on that. That was a success where we're instructing the country and everyone else. A failure was four hospitals in Boston wanted to do heart transplants all at the same time. Instead of coming in one at a time and maybe being denied, all together they could do it with all their boards of directors and the political clout they had. They all wanted to come in. Boston was the first place where they ever did kidney transplants. So we're kind of behind the thing on hearts. So we called up all the heart transplant programs and said, what would you recommend? And they said, the surgery is a piece of cake. It's having staff at 3 o'clock in the morning recognize you a tissue rejection. You need volume in one location, not spread out. So we came in strongly supporting one unit. And once we get up to 10 or 15, go on. They rejected us. Tremendous political support for the hospitals, all the power they bring in. The next year, one hospital had a 50% mortality rate. Should be 5%. We were right. It was unsafe. They went ahead and did it. They didn't care. They didn't follow the advice. So that was a failure that we had. But the bottom line was we were right in the first place in the things we recommended. So then health planning in Boston ended when $800,000 of state support disappeared when we disagreed on a certificate of need of a hospital that moved out to the suburbs wanting more beds. And I'm recommending that they work with the local hospitals in their low-cost beds. Instead of adding new high-cost beds, they politically got support for what they were doing, politically strong enough to take $800,000 in the state budget away. And that's how health planning ended. That was a failure, you might say.
Did you have enough power or did you not have enough power, do you think, looking back now?
When the money was taken out of the state budget, as opposed to other states like New York, where the state stepped in to keep one health planning agency alive to help develop more success in health planning, it was the lack of full understanding of the legislature about what we could have done if we continued on. And the way this was taken out of the state budget surprised everybody by the time they figured out what had happened. But it was we irritated the wrong person who had the political clout to say, see you later, who had no idea what we were doing or what our successes were and who supported us.
But you also, as you indicate, had a lot of not great feelings from the major hospital institutions in Greater Boston. Is that true? You ruffled a lot of feathers along the way?
Feathers, they would have a big hospital wanted to add 1,000 beds. They'd come in with their 18 accountants and lawyers and meet with me and my staff, one or two people, and would try to tell them that that's not what Boston needed in healthcare. We're very supportive of primary care, supporting of health centers. Why aren't you doing more in areas that we need? And they weren't too thrilled that somebody had another opinion other than just jam this thing and shove it right through. And all these hospitals get trustees who are supportive of whatever they want to do. You know, a lot of politically powerful people help them get these things through. So you need to have another viewpoint, questioning them, looking at the balance, look at what's needed, maybe other than what they think they needed. But if they have all the money, what they need seems to be the one that's being considered, not the people who don't have the money where the need is greater. So there needs to be another view out there about what's needed and why aren't we spending our money on what's needed. And that was the view that we tried to offer by not only the certificate of need process, by the other things that we were doing in looking at variations in hospital use, in actually doing ground rounds at hospitals. One hospital we had in particular, we went in and told them, your hysterectomy rate is off the wall. It's very, very high. Something's going on here. A year later, the chief of surgery at that hospital called me and said, our hysterectomy rate just went right down to the state rate, thanks to your lecture on what was going on. We knew one person was out of control, doing too many hysterectomies, made a little extra money. Your data proved it. So we took that data, all the hospitals in Massachusetts got the data. We explained to them what it was about. So we got a lot of them beginning to question whether they were cause of some of the high rates. And we got the surgeons, other physician groups looking at the same data.
Charlie, I want to ask you a big picture question, because as you said, health planning ended and ultimately rate regulation ended in our state. And we ultimately evolved the system where some significant numbers of smaller hospitals closed through merger and acquisition. We got these large healthcare systems with a fair amount of resources. And then we have the have-nots who sort of, you know, struggle to have, you know, minimal amounts of resources to try to make it. What's your view of all that? If health planning had continued, would the world look as it does now in Massachusetts in terms of the healthcare scene?
Well, I think I did go to a hearing when the Norwood Hospital was being given over to Curtis Christie. And I went to that hearing, and I was the only person speaking against that because I grew up in Norwood. My father helped build the Norwood Hospital. Local money, local people, local resources built, and with an incompetent administration of the hospital that brought in an incompetent board of directors to support it, they were giving it away. It's all the Norwood money built it. Why are you giving it away? Just because you have an incompetent administration to a hospital system that's already in trouble. Needham gave their support over to Leahy. Why doesn't Norwood go to some hospital in Boston that's on stable grounds? I was the only person at the hearing because they brought on their former trustees who just were there supporting the incompetent administration. So health planning would have asked a lot of questions as Stuart gets started. The first question would be, every one of the hospitals in Massachusetts that was taken over by Stuart built their hospitals with local money, local people, local fundraising, local people. And you know, the first question is, if you're going to make a profit, how much of your profit is coming out of the pockets of people in Massachusetts who built these institutions? Are you going to be building sailboats and fishing boats and jet airplanes out of the profits that were hardworking people in Massachusetts built these hospitals? Now, they may have had some difficulties and problems that could be solved. It's true that if you're serving an area where most of the population is on Medicaid or uninsured, but those things are changing. We have one of the lowest uninsured rate in the United States now because of Mitt Romney and Ted Kennedy and the Affordable Care Act. A lot of these hospitals that had a lot of uninsured are beginning to change a little bit. So the bottom line, the question is, where do your profits come from out of the hardworking people of Massachusetts who built these hospitals? So if health planning were around, questions like that would have been asked. Show us where your profits are coming from and how are these hospitals getting any better if you're taking $800 million out of the state? It's absolutely the most egregious thing you could ever. So health planning, we have accountants, we have lawyers, we have all kinds of people who volunteer their services who would have gotten involved with serious questions that were never asked. The people involved at the time, bureaucrats, they do their job. They're trying to keep people happy. Stuart's getting nice contributions to state legislators, I'm sure. They're not questioning it. So health planning wasn't influenced by contributions like that. So I don't think these things even would have gone on the table, never mind reached to where they are right now. Now, New York State didn't say to health systems agencies, see you later. They put $26 million into the Finger Lakes Health Planning Agency to build up private, bring in doctors to the rural areas of New York, as well as to see if you can help the other areas of the state that don't have a long history of health planning. And it's consumer health planning. It's getting ordinary people who are smart to ask questions. The neighborhood health system in Boston was set up by retirees who were smart and realized their doctors, the primary care doctors in their neighborhoods, they died, they retired, they brought back healthcare into the neighborhoods of Boston.
So, Charlie, you make reference to a Finger Lake organization in New York. Can you explain what that is to the listeners?
This idea of community-based health planning started with the federal government getting in the mid-70s to supporting this. There was already an effort in upstate New York, up in the Rochester area, Kodak and a lot of big companies. It already started about 20 years before, where the community get together with educators and unions and businesses and all these people to look at their health system and what was needed, what could we do better. So they really were doing all of this work before the federal government got into it. And they were somewhat inspirational for the federal government to see what health planning might be. So they went on, and when health planning got started, they were one of the places in the country everybody looked to where the innovators really were still around. So they became really one of the health planning agencies that everybody looked to as a model of how do you get a community. Now, Rochester, New York didn't have hospitals like Boston and New York, but you know, the hospitals respected it because they had the community, all the top businesses, the top unions, the top all were involved with this. So the hospitals had to listen. So it became a great model. So when the federal government decided health planning wasn't going to cut health costs, we needed competition. Was the solution. This is all political. The Democrats liked consumer involvement. The Republicans liked competition. That's how health planning partly ended. No support for community involvement. New York State was smart enough to say, this group up in the Rochester area was doing innovative things. So the state of New York came up with a $26 million grant to the nonprofit corporation to help find doctors for rural parts of upstate New York around Rochester, but also to see if this model could work in other parts of New York. So that's where this, they changed the name from Finger Lakes to Common Ground Healthcare in Rochester, which continued on. Health Planning Council for Greater Boston never had that chance. What money we were getting from the state was cut out of the budget for political reasons, and health planning died here. But there was no vision in the state to what we were doing. And partly there was no even appreciation for epidemiology and looking at variations in some of the things we were doing. So that's basically the history of the premier health planning agency that started before the federal government got involved. It became a model for many of us to look at when we're looking at health planning or how it could be successful.
Let's jump forward to today. So we have the State Department of Public Health, which still has a certificate of need program and goes through an evaluation process. We have a different HPC, not the Health Planning Council. We now have the Health Policy Commission, which does financial reviews and analysis and lots of other issues as well. Is that inadequate? Is there something else that's needed that's not there now? And how would you define that? What is missing right now in terms of the Massachusetts health policy, health planning landscape?
Well, a lot of good things did develop after, I mean, the health law advocates got started, healthcare for all, community catalysts, a lot of innovative things have been done that have made a difference in Massachusetts. It's just there's no one out there speaking as a policy group, consumer-driven, as health planning used to do. I think if I were advising people, I'd do an analysis of how good is the Massachusetts program right now compared to what New York is doing and other states. How good are we? What are we missing? If Finger Lakes gets involved, what would that add to the Health Policy Commission to have the most of them are experts in health. One of the things that was turned when they had heart disease, cancer, and stroke, we had all experts fixing up the health system. They need consumer involvement, people who are ordinary people who are also very smart asking tough questions. Does Massachusetts need another organization that has some power to research things with good quality staff that aren't policy people by training? That's a basic question. And I think an evaluation of how good are we? Are we the best we could be? Are there things that are missing that other states have? There's innovation going all around us. We don't necessarily do all of it. So I would strongly suggest either our states, I'd look at the Finger Lakes group, I'd look at the program that they did to keep the ideas of health planning alive. Common Ground Health is the group in Rochester. They were appreciated by New York State. The Health Planning Council for Greater Boston was not appreciated by the legislators that could have made a difference. But there are other ways of setting up another organization that's missing right now that would ask the tough questions from a consumer perspective.
Should it be a part of the state, or should it be, because a lot of the groups that you mentioned, like Health Law Advocates and Healthcare for All, they're private nonprofits outside of state government. Where should this be? What would this look like if the state were to create something new?
Well, the example I used with the Finger Lakes group, it's state money giving to a nonprofit. It's giving them the funding to set up their own organization to do this and to be advisors to the state, not controlled by the state, by politicians, by we had fights when I was with the state health planning agency. The state health planning agency just rolled over for a lot of these decisions because they were under political control. So I would suggest state money given to an advocacy group, setting up a new advocacy group that is asked to come forward and comment on certificates of need and other things. all of the work that we did with the College of Surgeons and these other groups died. No one picked up on it. No one realized the value of data to hold people accountable in certain parts of the state where we weren't providing care to people. We're doing too much care. So none of that all died, and it was appreciated all throughout the country. They couldn't believe a consumer group had surgeons and pediatricians and obstetricians writing papers in their journals with them. That died. No one understood it except the doctors that worked with us. So there's a lot that could be done in addition to Certificate of Need, but it would be a nonprofit outside state government, state of New York funded this group, the Finger Lakes Group, funded it as a Common Ground Health. That is one example, but I think the voice that isn't being heard in Massachusetts, in my opinion, is consumer groups representing all the different consumer groups that speak out on these issues and offer an opinion. And I'm not sure that opinion is being received today.
Charlie, thank you so much. We're out of time, but we're going to have to leave it there. But we really appreciate the words of wisdom coming from you as the former executive director of Health Planning Council for Greater Boston. Thanks very much.
Well, thanks very much for what you guys are doing. I think it's a very valuable program.